All right, good evening. Welcome to the regular meeting of the Kensington Police Protection and Community Services District. I am Rochelle Sharon-Swant. This is the open session of Thursday, February 9th. Slightly delayed, my apologies. Thank you for waiting. I will now take roll call. Director Hassan, here. Director Cordova?
Here.
Director Welsh?
Here.
Vice President Natoli?
Here.
And I'm here, clearly. And thank you for braving the dramatic weather today to be here. We will begin with public comments of concerning items not on our agenda. Oh, I'm sorry, thank you. Nothing to report out on closed session. It's our usual juicy reveal. So any comments on items not on our agenda?
Am I close enough?
I'm not quite hearing you.
Hit the button on the bottom. It's on the bottom of the mic. Right underneath your indicator.
Hello?
There you go.
Yes, good evening, Jim Watt. At the last board meeting, I expressed my concerns about the increase in district expenses to pay for escalating pension costs. I pointed out that our unfunded pension liabilities increased by $515,000 in 2015 and are expected to increase by another $700,000 in 2016. These future debt obligations are equal to our total unrestricted reserves. We have now received our updated OPEB report, which covers the recommended contributions we should contribute to meet our long-term medical obligations. About a year ago, we discussed the previous OPEB report, and it was agreed that the actuarial firm that completed that report had made several unrealistic assumptions. We therefore decided to redo the analysis using the firm that did our OPEB reports until about 5 years ago, until Chief Harmon decided to switch firms. The findings of our new OPEB study recommend that we increase our medical trust fund's annual contributions to $405,000. That's for the trust fund, which would be an annual increase of about $225,000 over what we were expecting to contribute. The new OPEB report also estimates that our unfunded medical liability is at $3.1 million, a sum equal to our unfunded pension liabilities. As I have stated many times, the money that we need to set aside to meet the benefit obligations of our officers is rising at a rate much faster than our revenue growth. And unlike revenue, which will decline in a recession, these benefit obligations will continue to grow. Then we have the additional costs for the community center, for the public safety building, and likely cost increase of adding a new GM position. All these potential expenses need to be considered against a backdrop of rising workers' comp costs, legal fees, overtime costs, and dispatch services. What does this mean? It means that any chance of turning a budget surplus in the future is most unlikely if we continue with our current staffing levels and employee compensation. Changes in how we deliver services are needed, and most of us with knowledge of cost control know what those options are. No doubt a qualified GM can provide some guidance, but only if the board identifies where and how these cuts need to be made. No one likes to take over a failing enterprise, but it's the board's responsibility to recognize the problems we face and start putting together some suggestions on how we can avoid depleting our limited reserves. Thank you.
Thank you. Pat Gillette. I wasn't here the last meeting because I was out of town. But I just wanted to reiterate some comments that I guess were made at the last board meeting about the $145,000 was spent to hire an architect. I hope the board at some point will answer with detail how it intends to pay for what sounds like it's going to be $1 million at least project. And that's just to do the basics, so that would mean there would be no KCC contribution. It's interesting to me that this board, having heard what you just heard from Jim Watt, and what we used to hear from the old board from various people in the community, it has decided to spend $145,000 on a project without knowing how it's going to fund that construction. So I ask the board to please inform the public in the interest of transparency what the plan is for raising sufficient funds to do the basic work that has to be done that we've already committed $145,000 to. I understand there was some idea about getting grant money. I'd like to know what grants you all are thinking about so that we can evaluate whether that is an actual possibility or just a pipe dream. Second, I continue to think it is irresponsible for the board to conduct its business with the director who has been absent now for 6 months without any comment except to say that she is, quote unquote, in Italy. Finally, since there have been so many negative comments about lawyers in this room, I just want to say that during this past week, regardless of your politics, I was proud to be a lawyer. To see our lawyers come out and defend the rights of people in general, not necessarily opposed to our current president, but to say that we will respect the rule of law and we will do what is necessary, if it means showing up at airports or writing petitions or standing up on the Senate floor and trying to say something that other people have been permitted to say. So I'm proud to be a lawyer, and I'm proud to wear that title. Thank you. Anyone else? Oh, sorry. Thanks. Anyone else? Oh, Mr. Lida.
I have a brief announcement, if that's okay.
Of course.
No, it's not okay.
Yeah. Awesome. Good evening, everybody. On Saturday the 18th, a week from Saturday, that's correct, 10 a.m. here, the Kansas Public Safety Council will be hosting a presentation on animals and disasters and emergencies. As you know, many people refuse to leave or evacuate their homes in times of emergency because they don't want to leave their pets. That's why this sort of program is really important. We'll be having Noelle Cross from Contra Costa Animal Services. She'll speak to the need for preparing in advance of the time of crisis, what to do before and after an emergency disaster. She'll also be offering licensing with amnesty at the event. That means if your pet is currently unlicensed, won't face any fines if you come up and get it licensed at that time. You'll need cash or check for the licensing fee, proof of a current rabies vaccination, and you should be good to go. In addition, we'll have Hazel Weiss, who will discuss service dogs, what to know and why. She'll be talking about access and advocacy for dogs and people who use and need them, training and technical assistance to get a service dog or perhaps train a service dog, public policy, assistance dog education, and service dog laws. And Hazel will be accompanied by her service dog, Virgil, who gives wonderful demonstrations. We hope to see you there.
Peter, I just have one quick question. Yes. So were you unable to get a vet to show up for this?
That's correct. So far, no vet.
And the vet would be to
demonstrate emergency. Pet first aid.
Pet first aid. Yeah, I'm still working on that for you.
Did you state a time?
10 a.m. Saturday, February 18th, 10 a.m. here.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Cooper?
Good evening, I'm Todd Cooley. Couple of meetings ago, I asked our attorney about following the Bond Act when someone participates in a meeting electronically. And after she gave me an answer, I came up with some smart aleck remark that I shouldn't have made. And I should have followed up and asked her what she was going to do to encourage our board to follow the Bond Act and do this in such a way that we know that we are following it at every meeting. When you think about it, we spend 2 or 3 years arguing and suing one another about some procedure. At this meeting, we spent $250,000 on attorneys. So I want to be sure that we follow the Bond Act. And I'd like to hear you explain to the board what needs to be done in order to do this. So we don't go a year from now and talk about an issue that was voted on and then argue about it. So my feeling is that the president at every meeting needs to ask the person who participates electronically, are you following the Bond Act at this meeting tonight? Am I right about this? Am I wrong?
Well, the absent director, well, she's not absent, but the teleconference director has been apprised of how to follow the Brown Act, and I am confident that she is following the requirements of the Brown Act in order to teleconference and participate in this meeting.
Okay, so you are telling me that we are doing what we are supposed to do.
Yes, Director Cordova, as well as Director Natoli, who was, has participated telephonically a few meetings ago, they have been apprised of how to follow the Brown Act when they're calling in from a remote location.
If we have a problem 2 years from now, I can come and see you then, huh?
I trust you will.
Okay, I probably will. Thank you.
Two quick comments. The first is that in reading minutes of a meeting, or portion of a meeting that I missed, I see that an architectural firm has been retained for the renovation project with the community center, and we were encouraged to visit their website to get more detail about their experience and qualifications. I did not find a specific URL or web address for that site, and although I Googled both of the names of the architects that were mentioned in the minutes, I couldn't turn up anything that looked like it was what was meant. So perhaps the district website could put up a link so that we can see who has been retained and see what their qualifications are and what other commissions of this type they've executed. That would be much appreciated. Second, this is actually it's a comment that has to do with the agenda, but it's about something that's not on the agenda. That specifically, at least in the online agenda package, is attachment 1 to resolution 2017-06.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that since that was not included, that item will be deferred to a future meeting?
Yes, we'll discuss that in just a moment. All right, board member comments? Any?
Nope.
Okay. Any? All right. Staff comments?
Nope.
Okay. All right.
We're moving on to item 6, the consent calendar. Would anyone like to seek items for discussion? The time.
Oh, okay.
I believe it's directors don't have questions.
6967 station equipment, $66,005.
Oh, okay. Could you give us a page number or an item number?
It's on page 43.
Thank you.
Item 967 is just called station equipment, 6,000 and a bit of change. What was that that we got?
It's item 967.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now.
Must be expenses.
I don't remember offhand.
I'm sorry, I don't remember offhand. May I email you tomorrow?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it seems like a fairly big number.
Well, it could be more than one item.
It had to have been something that was budgeted, otherwise I would have highlighted it. But because it was an annual budgeted item, that's why I didn't mention it.
Okay.
So I'll look up and tell
you. Sorry to see that Carol's not checking up on it.
Yeah, and I didn't bring my board book this evening. I wanted to look up the budget for you. I'm so sorry. Thank you.
And I have a question on the Watch Commander report, page 48. It looked like there were three officers on duty, 1800 to 6600, and only one from 600 to 1800. Seems a little unbalanced in terms of staffing. I know we have staffing problems, but I would think you'd want to try and even it out.
Are you basically saying that Barrow, Wilson, and Ramos all work that shift?
That's what it looks like to me.
Barrow is on a different team than Wilson and Ramos.
Why don't we let Chief Hall respond?
Yeah, go ahead.
They work on different days. Same hours, different days.
Okay. So there's only one person from 600 to 1800 for the whole week?
There's one person assigned to patrol. There's also a detective that's on duty, who's playing a dual role to assist patrol and work in the detective.
He's also assisting patrol?
Yes.
Okay. I know you're short-staffed. It just seemed like an inequitable balance. Thank you.
And the chief is also available.
Okay.
To provide assistance as needed.
All right. Any further comments? Okay. Would anyone like to make a motion for the approval of the consent calendar?
I move to approve the consent calendar.
I'll second the motion.
All right. All in favor? We'll do a roll call. Sorry. I think anytime we teleconference, we must do a roll call. Okay. Lynn, would you be able to?
Director Hassai?
Aye.
President Sherris-Lott?
Aye.
Vice President Natoli?
Aye.
Director Welsh?
Yes.
Director Cordova?
Aye.
All right, so 5-0, we approve the consent calendar, which does allow for a second meeting every month. So finally crossed that milestone. Hooray! More meetings, folks. Okay, we're moving on to new business. If you all don't mind if we jump ahead to 7B, and as Mr. Doro noted, my apologies, this was a mix-up between two very similar-looking documents that appeared in the agenda that only, unfortunately, got put in once. So item B, I recommend that we table this item until all the documentation can be provided to the public. Okay? All right. So moved and so done. All right. So back to item A, the board will review and consider approval of an employment agreement between the district and Ricky L. Hull, setting the compensation terms and conditions of his temporary employment as interim general manager chief of police. That's that. Page 85, if you're in the agenda packet, and we can begin discussion.
Would
the board...
President?
Yes.
Here's one, I'm sorry.
Yes. Go ahead.
Would you help me remember if the employee must leave the room during the discussion?
I think the employee can leave during the discussion.
It's not a requirement, though. I just thought that.
It's not a requirement.
So, is Mr. Holtzman here?
Yes.
Oh, there, sorry.
Yes, so I would suggest that Mr.
Holtzman, could you, John, could you present the item for us? Thank you.
And actually, I think, given the concerns about
Mike.
Given the concerns about over there, it's more complicated.
Okay. He's charging us for blocking the press room.
Yeah. It's I think
that given the concerns under FPC, et cetera, rules, it might be safer for the chief not to be in the discussion, but
okay.
if that's okay with you.
You should not be in the room when the discussion occurs.
All right.
Not that this is don't know about it. Okay. So if you'd like, I can take you through the basic terms.
Please, would you state your name, rank, and serial number for me?
Hi, I'm John Holtzman. Some of you have seen me before. You thought you got rid of me, but I'm back for limited purposes only.
Yep.
Exactly. I'm with Ernie Sloan Holtzman Sakai, and I do the employment and labor work still with the district. So I was asked to work out the terms of this agreement with Chief Hall. So the basic terms of the agreement are, first of all, the term of the agreement itself is December 17, 2016 through May 17, 2017. So it's a little, basically about 5 months, I guess. Number one. Number two, the employee acknowledges that during the term of the agreement, the board may decide to split the general manager and the chief of police positions, and that should you do so and appoint a separate general manager, then he would only perform the duties of the chief of police, but the initial appointment leases to both positions. The salary is set up in a way that accounts for both possibilities. So the salary for being the chief of police would increase his current wages by roughly 15% to $129,031. And the salary for being general manager would increase it by another 10% roughly to $140,857. There are some differences in the way that's calculated. The salary for chief of police will, $129,000, will be reportable to PERS as compensation. The difference between the $129,000 and the $140,000 will not. That is because that is compensation for doing general manager duties, and the miscellaneous employees of the district are not in PERS. Due to the interim nature of the position, it's understood that Chief Hull will have the right to return to his prior position at the end, which he's a for-cause employee in that job, where he's an at-will employee as chief. The other major terms are quite similar to the terms of the POA's MOU, the major ones being that on health, we will receive the same health insurance as the active employees, which is to say that you will have to contribute $85 a month to the Kaiser plan, of course more if you chooses something with a higher plan. And then starting June 30th, 2017, I'll have to contribute $125 to the plan. The benefits, however, are significantly different from the POA health benefits in that the board previously agreed that the chief position would get a would get a cafeteria plan as opposed to a direct PEMCA contribution. What that means is that were he to retire directly from the chief position, he would not get what the folks in the bargaining unit get, which is essentially the same benefits in retirement. So he's under the cafeteria plan, the same cafeteria plan that Chief Hart was under. Sure, I had a little request to explain that further. So the way that PEMCA benefits work is if you, whatever you're contributing for active employees directly to PEMCA, PEMCA is, by the way, part of CalPERS, it's part of CalPERS that runs health benefits. Whatever you contribute in a direct contribution for your employees, you must also pay for your retirees. There is, however, an exception to that rule if you have a cafeteria plan. If you have a cafeteria plan, you can contribute the minimum required contribution to PEMCA directly, and the rest of the money flows for a cafeteria plan, and the health benefits in retirement are only based on the direct contribution, which is currently set, it's set by law, currently it's $128 a month. We instituted this with Chief Hart because the concern is chiefs, particularly if they come from the outside, might be here for only a year or two or 3 years, and they could get lifetime health insurance as a result of that. And so what that would mean, a full family Kaiser health insurance is close to $20,000 a year now. So you would literally be paying $20,000 a year, and of course it goes up, you'd be literally paying $20,000 a year for, until the person is in Medicare. So that's why we did that earlier. Anyway, then on to CalPERS retirement. He'll continue in the CalPERS retirement system. He'll get the same benefits that he was getting. Except, of course, those benefits will go up by virtue of the fact, as Mr. Watt has pointed out previously, that his salary goes up and the benefits that you get in pension are based on your final salary. So it will affect his final salary if he retires from that position. And even if he doesn't, it'll probably still be his high year, so it will affect his final salary. It will not affect the district's costs to CalPERS, except to the extent that the way it works right now is there's a 90% mandatory employee contribution. The district is currently paying, we were paying the full 9, we're picking up that full 9. Under the most recent labor agreement with the union, we're now gonna be down to paying 5, and the employee's paying 4. So the employer contribution on it while he is in this position does go up because you're paying pension costs on that salary. But what it won't do is it won't raise the actuarial valuation going forward after retirement because you're in a risk pool. And in that risk pool, you're blended with literally millions of other lives. And so it won't have any appreciable effect on the cost of the district going forward. It will, as I say, just to be clear, cost more in health, in pension, because if you're paying, let's say, a 35 or 40% rate to CalPERS, you're paying 40% of $129,000 versus 140% of his prior salary, which is 15% less. That probably was as clear as mud, everybody's in the world. The remainder of his benefits will be as set forth in the MOU with POA. In discussing it with the board, we felt that was the easiest way to address a situation where you were bringing somebody up from the ranks and already had this life insurance and other things rather than try to renegotiate a different set of benefits on these smaller heads. And that's it.
All right. Any board comments? Yeah? Okay. Comments from the public?
My question has to do with how you decided that only 10% of his time is going to be general manager work and 90% of the time is going to be chief of police work. Did you do some type of a workload analysis or some other assessment?
So that's a great question. So there are a couple points about that. First of all, we didn't decide necessarily that it's 10% of his time versus whatever else. We simply made the determination, the board is simply making a determination about what salary to pay for which services. So it might not be, but I would say there was, as you know, a CalPERS audit, and we did report back to CalPERS that the general manager duties were 5 to 10% of the job. So this is consistent with what we have previously reported to CalPERS.
And that was, I'm sorry, I don't know the document that you're talking about where you reported back to CalPERS that 5 to 10% was general manager work.
There was a CalPERS audit.
Right, I recall that.
And the audit found, we think erroneously, because we're appealing the audit, but the audit found that the district needed to separate out the duties of the general manager from the duties of the chief of police, and that the general manager duties were not pensionable.
Right.
So what CalPERS may do, and it is of concern, is they may seek to reduce the pensions of at least the last two police chiefs who've left.
Would that be based on the decision you're making here?
No, not at all. That would be based on whatever the status quo was at the time.
Right, okay. So you've appealed it, and I read the appeal, and you've quoted a number of cases that you believe support your position. But now we're changing tact, and we're now allocating 90% of his salary towards a pensionable salary, and 10% to a non-pensionable part, which is the general manager. But it still comes down to the question, how you derive that allocation of 10% versus 90%, because what you're telling CalPERS is that he is spending 90% of his time on chief of police work because that's the pensionable salary, and 10% is not general manager, is general manager work.
Well, again, this is a salary determination, not a specific allocation of time, so I'm not sure I agree with that characterization.
Okay, I guess we can agree to disagree, because certainly my experience in the public sector has been that you do a workload analysis and you allocate salaries according to that workload analysis. It just seems to be a little arbitrary that you choose 10% versus another percentage. I mean, you could go back to the Brown Taylor report back in the late 90s, where that report indicated that the allocation of time would be 35% for general manager, 65% for chief of police. And to me, that might be a fair way of doing it. Then you also wouldn't get into the problem of the principal, the spike in retirement salary, not a large one, but still, that would result from the fact that he is getting essentially $7,000 added to his pensionable salary.
So there are a couple of different points. With respect to, say, 65-35 allocation, given that I think it's axiomatic that he's going to get a raise of some sort for being police chief as opposed to being a sergeant, if it were 65-35, and you were giving him a raise, you would end up with a number a lot higher than I think the board, as a policy matter, was willing to set for the position.
Well, if you still set it at $140,000 for both, that would not happen.
Let me say, I'm a lawyer. I'm not the person who makes the actual compensation decisions. That is the board. So, not wishing to look like I'm ducking the question.
No, that's fine. So, we have to at least, first we start with the basis of the fact that what was his salary as Master Sergeant, given all the parameters, the longevity pay, the holiday pay, all the factors that went into that salary. So then we decided that, of course, because the chief of police role requires more hours, more responsibility, I should say, not more hours necessarily, but that there is a spike in, or a jump in compensation. And then in terms of the 90-10, for us to go back to the Brown-Taylor report, it would be inconsistent with our appeal to CalPERS, and we seek not to disagree with ourselves. We are admitting that we're in the process of splitting those positions. So we are telling CalPERS, yes, we realize that there are separate functions, and from this point forward, we will allot for that time. But in the past, that is not what we're not seeking to have that reconfigured.
Right, no, I understand that. But you could easily go to CalPERS and say it's 65-35. 10 and 9 and 90 is just, in my mind, sort of arbitrary numbers. And frankly, you could...
Well, unfortunately, that would be disagreeing with what past chiefs have told CalPERS, as well as our appeal. So again, we would be disagreeing with ourselves.
Okay.
Well, I mean, if were we to do a complete reassessment of the position at this point, which we are in the process of doing, but that was not our wish for this interim combined position.
Well, one last point. I mean, what you've done is you've taken his salary and viewed that from the standpoint of the chief of police position by increasing it by 15%. You could have just as easily said that as you did with Hart, you could have said that the combined position, the salary was $145,000, regardless of the separation between the two.
That's right, but here's the problem. Because this contract is unique in that it allows for the separation of the positions, we had to specify what would be the salary of the position if we separate them, unless we wanted to renegotiate the salary upon separating the positions, which the board didn't want to do.
Okay, well, there's no sense in belaboring the point. I understand your point, I just have a different
opinion. Well, I would like to be clear about one thing. It wasn't that the board didn't want to do it, that's what the board is deciding now.
I'm not arguing with that, but I am
a little concerned about undercutting our appeal, because it seemed to me the crux of the appeal was you can't separate them, and now we're sort of saying we are separating them. It is after the fact, and I'm just looking for a legal assurance that the action we're taking now after the fact is not going to undercut our appeal in the same fashion.
You know, I think our again, we're working on the appeal too, so, you know, I thought a lot about this. My feeling is, because you are now talking about actually separating the positions, that we really have no choice but to start specifying what that looks like. And it's consistent with the position we've taken with CalPERS about the percentages. Our position with CalPERS doesn't really turn on whether or not, it's not really about the allocation. Although CalPERS may disagree with the 10%, they may say it's more. Our position with CalPERS is that it's utterly illogical, and they have never in the past attempted to separate the roles of a job. And in this case, so much of the managerial work of the chief of police / general manager is ultimately managing a government most of whose employees are police. So I think it's actually we've done as good a job as we can do threading that needle, number one. But again, my view is that CalPERS is wrong as a matter of law, and that our decision later to separate the jobs for completely different reasons, which is that you have, or potentially separate, by the way, you haven't decided to do that, I guess, but you know, would be based entirely on policy decisions that you have a right to make.
All right, other comments? Oh, sorry.
Good evening, Jim Wadigan. I didn't know that Mr. Holtzman was going to be here, and I prepared some remarks that, of course, he's raised some issues here that I'd like to kind of jump in on before I go to my prepared remarks. First, on the issue of
why the allocation that she used. I was actually kind of surprised when I saw your response to CalPERS that you did not make mention of the fact that, in fact, CalPERS, because I sent out a PRA to them asking them this question, at no time since the formation of this district has ever challenged the legitimacy of paying the CLP GM the full 100%. This is the first time this has come up, and it struck me as kind of unusual that you didn't make that one of the crux issues. But I don't want to go there. I just wanted to point that out. I'm sure you're probably aware of it, but
of course.
It seemed to me that it's a little hard, it seems a little disingenuous for an agency to come back at you and ask you to make an allocation after 20 years or so of accepting these contributions and never saying a word. That's my comment on that. My other comment is that I'd like to clarify something, because you left kind of a slightly erroneous impression in the minds, I think, of the audience, assuming that we could all follow this rather convoluted medical care arrangement. As you have pointed out, under his new position, GM COP Hull will be in a cafeteria plan. As a consequence, were he to retire from that position, he would not be entitled to medical benefits. However, as you also know, and so as the audience should know, that contained in that in the contract, the employment contract, is a sentence that says that due to the inherent nature of the position, the district and employee understood and agree that employee will be permitted to return to his status as Master Sergeant upon termination of this agreement. So if I'm Sergeant Hull, and I think we all understand how this game gets played, because it got played on us by COP Hart, if in fact you're about to lose your medical in retirement, which would be a huge cost, will you simply go back to your original position and you take that position for the 30 days as Mr. Hart did, and bingo, you have retirement. You're now covered by retirement. That is the way in which I understood it working.
What you're saying is absolutely accurate. The agreement, as you know, Chief Hull has worked for the district for a long time. He's not somebody who came in just for a year, 2 years, or whatever, and has a right to a retiree health benefit, whether I think that's a good policy or a bad policy. And I think it would have been, and again, this is all up to the board, but in my view, it would have been a lot to ask for a 5-month contract as chief to give up your lifetime health benefit.
Absolutely, I understand that. I just wanted to make it clear that I don't think he's going to forfeit his retirement medical benefits, that's all. Okay, to my prepared comments. While I believe that Mr. Hull can perform the functions of GMCOP on an interim basis called out in his contract, I have concerns about the manner in which this matter has been presented for board and public review, the costs of the contract, and what this contract suggests as to the future changes to the GMCOP position. In my opinion, a matter of this importance should include, as part of the agenda package, the following information: a summary, action required, background information, an analysis of the factors under consideration, and the financial and legal considerations. To see how most cities handle these agenda items, just go to any city website and look up their agenda packets. Unfortunately, in this case, in the case of the Hull appointment, we have only been provided with an employment contract in this month's agenda packet. With only this information, neither the board nor the public can adequately evaluate the issue. With regard to the financial cost of this appointment, the only thing that was provided was a posting on the KPPCSD website under contracts and prepared by Adam Benson, which detailed the increase in salary costs. This analysis did not include the additional $9,100 the district will have to pay for increased annual pension costs, nor did it show how this salary increase would greatly enhance the chief's lifetime retirement pension by as much as $375,000, assuming he lives another 30 years. As I said at the last board meeting, I am greatly opposed to providing this pension enhancement to a person already eligible for retirement who stands to reap this benefit after only 1 year in the job. I call this pension spiking, and it should not be permitted either by the employee or the employer. Perhaps the biggest economic cost of the district that has been left out of the Benson analysis is the cost of replacing Hull's former patrol duties with either extra part-time officers or more overtime. If you look at this month's police report, you will see that only 4 officers were doing patrol work, requiring extra days of work or extensions to their already long 12-hour shifts. We have clearly reached the point where coverage will collapse if just one officer is out on vacation or sick for an extended period. The cost to fix the coverage problem needs to be considered and added to the cost of Hull's promotion in order that we can fully understand the cost of this appointment. Finally, I am concerned that this promotion is being labeled as interim, with the implication that a GM will be hired within the next few months. Before we undertake any such appointment, I would hope that the public will be able to weigh in on a GM candidate's qualifications, the salary costs, plus any office and administrative support costs, and a list of the areas the GM will be focused on in an effort to rein in costs. Given what I said earlier in this meeting, we have little room to add costs to the budget, and can only do so if those expenditures are going to result in the certainty of even greater cost savings. I hope the GM vetting process involves the community and includes a thorough analysis of the pros and cons of such an appointment.
Love agreeing with Jim Watt. So I want to emphasize the disappointment that I and I think several members of the community have about the complete lack of transparency in the way this appointment has come down. The fact that we have asked for and failed to receive any information about Mr. Hull's qualifications for the GM part of the job, or even for the COP part of the job, is just shocking, particularly given the scrutiny that was given to the candidates who applied for that position when we made the initial hire of Mr. Hart 18 months or 2 years ago. It just seems wrong. Now, I come to these meetings, and the board members sit there and stare out at us and say nothing about what the qualifications are of this man for this position. And then you tell us that you decided to pay him $140,000, a 15% increase for what he's going to be doing as COP, and 10% for what he's going to be doing as GM. But we have nothing to document what that means. How did you decide that 15% was appropriate for the quote-unquote, I think you said, Rochelle, he should receive a spike in his salary? How did you decide that was the appropriate quote-unquote spike? What does it have to do with the duties that he's actually going to have to perform now? Is it a reasonable amount of increase for what he's going to have to do? Is it sufficient or is it not sufficient? I have no way of knowing because no one in this board has bothered to explain that. Then you tell us that you're going to assign 10% of his salary to general manager duties. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean that the general manager who we're going to be looking for is only going to be paid $11,000 because that's what you've determined that that job is worth? That is what a reasonable amount to pay for someone who does a general manager job, $11,000 a year? Is that what you're telling us?
And what are those general manager duties that he's going to be performing? And what are his qualifications to perform those duties? We have not shared any of that with us. And it is shocking to me that the people who come to this meeting month after month, week after week, and many of those who are in the audience now, who got up and grilled unmercifully the previous board about the qualifications of Mr. Karp and Mr. Harmon and the other candidates who applied for this job, that you sit here and think that we should think it's all right to pay $140,000 to someone whose qualifications have never been made clear to us, and that there is no justification for the amount of the increase. Why is it that we're paying him $140,000? That's my question. And I would appreciate if someone on the board, instead of just sitting there and staring out at us, would actually answer that question with facts. And those facts to me should include, here are the additional duties he's going to perform, this is the amount of extra time it's going to take, this is the educational background he has, the certificates he has to justify that, and that's why he's getting this increase of COP. And here are the duties he's going to perform as GM, and we believe that is worth $11,000. Because otherwise, when you hire a general manager and you don't pay him $11,000 for her, $11,000, which I don't think you're going to do, I think you're going to pay that person a whole lot more, you are going to be running into yourself in terms of the arguments that you just made today, that somehow the general manager job is only worth 10%. So you can't have it both ways. You've got to define what you're doing and why you're doing it. And we as a public have the right to have that information, especially those of you who ran on the campaign of transparency.
Thank you.
A. Stephen Silk, and I don't have anything prepared, so I'm just going to wander. How much were you paying interim GM COP Hart?
$145,000 a year plus his $18,000 a year medical benefits.
Right. It seems to me, then, that to pay interim GM COP Hull $140,000 is not out of the question, and that's where that number might possibly have come from. And I want to, again, I'm unprepared on this, I want to point out something that I have commented to Jim about. He is considering interim GM COP Hull's current, the proposed benefit package. And what I think, and how much more that is costing us just for Hull, what I think you should consider is, what is the difference? Suppose we had Hart back. Let's say that in June you had converted Hart's package into another year, whether it was a permanent position or an interim position, but you gave him another year. So then you've got Hart's package at that, plus Master Sergeant Ricky Hull's package at $120,000 or whatever it was. So that would be like $145,000 plus $120,000 for the two of them. And people are arguing about paying Hull $140,000 and not having anybody else right now unless we decide to hire another police officer. And as far as the 10%, 15%, I believe Ricky Hull is going to be a police officer plus a chief of police, plus a general manager, all three of those. He's going to be, favorite term, boots on the street, because we are down three officers right now. All right? So again, unprepared, but I thank you. I think we are not getting a bad deal here. And again, you can look at it many different ways. And I would, and probably in 6 months, I might do a statistical analysis to see how much crime has increased in the year that we have been down 3 officers. But as I pointed out, I think in January, numbers mean nothing. You can screw around with them any way you want. You can select them. So crime statistics will mean nothing. Traffic statistics mean nothing if all the data isn't reported.
Sorry, I forgot to identify myself. The first time I spoke, it's Paul Doro, Kensington resident. I find myself in total agreement with Jim Watt's comments about the financial structural aspects of this decision, and with Pat Gillette's comments about the lack of transparency and really inscrutable reasoning in making this other than the most temporary of temporary appointments. I understand the need to have somebody around to sign documents and so forth and to take care of ministerial functions, but I don't think that that's what's intended here. I think if Chief Hull is going to actually be the chief, based on what was in the agenda package about the duties of the combined position, he's going to be investigating and responding to citizen complaints. At a prior meeting, I learned that Chief Hall is himself the subject of a citizen complaint. Who's going to investigate that? And how is it going to work when he completes this interim assignment and goes back to being one of the force and has had to impose discipline on people who are now colleagues and peers instead of subordinates? So it's a untenable situation for anything other than the shortest possible time, at least in my opinion. And what I would hope is that the intention is to move expeditiously to either identify, make a decision about whether you're going to split the position. That's first. Make that decision, please. And if you're going to do it, do it. And if you're not going to do it, fine. But whichever way it is, please get about recruiting somebody to take on this job, because I think the way it is right now, you're not only setting up the district for problems, but you're setting Chief Hull up for failure in a job that it seems to me he's just not in a position to execute to the fullest. Thank you.
Further public comment? Not now. Board member comments? Would anyone like to begin?
Go ahead. Yeah. Can I? I actually find myself agreeing with the last thing Mr. Doro said. You know, to me it does make sense to do this as an interim measure, a very short interim measure. And I do remember fairly vividly discussion at the beginning of this that all of the board members, current board members, seem committed to this being a temporary position, and we would expedite our efforts to find both a general manager and chief of police, and I believe we probably all agree it's better to split the positions if we can. I will say that, you know, it would have been cheaper to have Hart stay here because he would have been a retired annuitant. He wouldn't have any further pension obligation, and there is truly, as Mr. Watt pointed out, there is an extra pension obligation here. But that's what we, you know, you have to pay people to do this work. You can't just put somebody in a position and say, well, you know, we're not going to pay you what the duties are worth because we don't like your qualifications or we don't think we like them. Whatever, he's got the job to do here. There's a lot of pressure on him. We should pay him for it, you know. And we got kind of locked into this because we didn't choose Hart. But once that decision was made, there really wasn't another short-term interim option available, and that's why I supported it, and I'll continue to support it, but I do expect efforts to proceed both on the general manager recruitment front and the chief of police recruitment front.
Okay, a couple quick clarifications, and then First off, we had already, we mentioned earlier that the board has already met with a consultant from PMG, the Public Management Group, and we have already begun the process of recruiting for general manager. Our consultant is at a board conference this week, and he is talking to prospective general managers. We had that special meeting in which we all discussed the role of a general manager in the community. Chief Hull has been aware of that from the moment that we began discussing the job with him. I also disagree with the math, Len, that you're using. At minimum, Kevin Hart cost us $165,000. And I will say, in other regards, purchase of a new vehicle, spending that I, as a board member, could disagree with, I think it cost us many thousands of dollars more. But we can agree to disagree on the math for that right now. Go ahead.
I'll speak more later. I unfortunately forgot my prepared remarks at home, but let me, from memory, make a couple of comments. First, promoting from within is a pretty standard practice in police departments, and Ricky has been promoted from a police officer to sergeant to master sergeant over the years. Interestingly, I understand that the first time that a hiring of a chief of police occurred from outside the Kensington Police Force was with Brown Taylor. And I know that there have been comments on his background. He did have a lot of supervision both with the Air Force and then also within police departments. He's taken a number of college courses, although he doesn't have a college degree. But the first people with college degrees that were chief of police, I understand, in Kensington were, again, Brown Taylor, Harmon, and Hart. We know how well things worked with Harmon. And interestingly, under Chief Garfield, the department was able to get accreditation from the Commission on Accreditation of Law Enforcement Agencies. And that is a 300-plus standard that you have to meet. It requires proof of compliance on an annual basis. And it marks that you have achieved professionalism with respect to service with respect to the service that the department provides to the community. There are many reasons, and that was lost, by the way, during the era of Harmon. There are many reasons, again, why you would promote from within. One is that you know the unwritten procedures of the department. You certainly know the community. And you know the strengths and weaknesses of your officers and also the staff. In addition, you've participated in decisions with the department. I've attended numerous meetings with Chief Hull over dispatch. We've met with the sheriff of Contra Costa County. We've met with the chiefs of police of Berkeley, Albany, and El Cerrito. They have a high regard for him, and there's a good rapport. At each time, at each meeting, he ends the meeting asking if there are opportunities for training of his officers with the department of these nearby communities. He has definitely a very good rapport with the chief. In fact, one chief, as we left the meeting, said that Chief Hull has spent more time in his office than his two predecessors combined. I think Chief Hull has definitely demonstrated a commitment to Kensington, and I do support his employment as both the interim chief of police and general manager. As President Sheriff Watts said, we are working expeditiously to split the position and to find a general manager with experience with handling a police department as well as the other services that the KPPCSD provides. Thank you.
I just have one thing I want to clear up. Are we also looking for a police chief as well? I mean, that's kind of what motivated my last comment. I see we're making good progress on the general manager, but I'm wondering what the plans are for a police chief.
I am not currently looking for another police chief. And I mean, to state openly, it would be my desire that Sergeant Hole, or excuse me, Chief Hole remain as our Chief of Police should we split the positions.
Well, that's new, isn't it? I thought before it was...
Well, it's the will of the board at the time. I mean, it will be a matter for the board to discuss and decide. I mean, I'm glad to state my position now, but of course, I'm not the only decider here. I'm one of five.
I just want to reiterate much of what's already been said around the promotion from within to this interim position of Chief Hull. I believe that there is an incredible amount of benefit to 19 years of experience and commitment to this community. I also want to say that a lot of these discussions around comparing positions and salaries, we are working with what we've got to start with. We have a master sergeant and his salary and where he's at. We have recent history of the combined position and the salaries and where we're at. In fact, the board, the previous board, has to publish a salary schedule. And that salary schedule shows the interim position, or the combined position, with a minimum and maximum level. The minimum level is $10,833 as a monthly salary, and the maximum is $12,083.33. And so interim Chief of Police GM Hull falls right in that range. So there's nothing shocking or surprising about where we've ended up exactly, based on where we started and where we had to go. And then working in the future with hopefully a separated position, it will be a whole new ball of wax. It won't be constrained by this interim combined position. So I think there's just some, I just think it's a mistake to try to make everything all equivalent. It's just not. I just support our interim chief.
If you have a comment, you want to
I do. I'm so sorry that it's been brought up by what you're saying.
No, that's fine.
I'm so sorry. I'm going to go to the microphone. I'm on.
Linda Lipscomb, Kensington resident. I think we got more information by way of your comments tonight than we have seen in the past, and it's still not adding up to a nice plan, as far as I'm concerned. I could make a suggestion, which would be, we have met, we have decided that the positions should be split. We have decided that there should be an interim Chief of Police General Manager, and that will last for 4 months. We have decided that the General Manager position will take X hours per month. This is our observation based on our experience level. We have decided the Chief of Police will take this amount of time. We have decided that we will interview for those positions, or not. Maybe you've decided that you'll promote from within. This is all in the realm of possibility. I think what you're hearing is that there's no coherent plan for doing this in an organized fashion. It may be that you've done that among yourselves, but it hasn't come through to the public. So I can make that suggestion to please put it in an organized fashion, like an executive summary of what you intend to do and what process you intend to go forward with in order to recruit for the position or positions. Thank you.
I'm sorry it hasn't been very clear. I think that nothing that we've said today or that you've summarized hasn't been said before, to be honest, but if it needs to be laid out in one place at one time, perhaps that's a good suggestion.
Yeah, and what we know primarily, what we're dealing with, are the known unknowns. So you've watched, we're climbing a ladder here. Unexpectedly, the board dealt with the departure of Kevin Kyle the day after Thanksgiving. We had two new board members seated. We've dealt with that process, and now we are in the process of figuring out the depth of dysfunction in the department. Hopefully it's not very as great as we might imagine, but we actually need someone in that role to tell us in some ways, to work through. We know based on our experience, and we know what assets we have in terms of staff, which are great on our side, but we have to have some, we're learning more as we move along, and so as fresh problems or fresh opportunities arise, we look for new solutions. Do you want to go ahead?
Anything to comment?
Oh, just a moment, Vanessa.
Coy Dane, Kensington resident. I have a question. I'm actually a civil servant. I love my pension. I love my pension. I work hard for it. And our police officers reserved it. My other question is, maybe I'm confused, is that if you're going to hire, keep on chief of police, are you supposed to open up advertising for opening application to make someone permanent?
Yes. Okay. Yes, you are correct. And we have, that's on our website. Vanessa?
Sorry, Mr. Kruger.
Hi, just want to provide my director's comment. Since I'm the only board member who voted against the original appointment of this candidate, instead of critiquing the candidate, I think we should really look at process of human resource management in our district. It is a profoundly missed in this agency, and it's one of the reasons that I did not support the original appointment. It was unlike any public recruitment I had seen in the two counties that I work in, and I lost that vote, and that's fine. I will say, however, that there is a material difference now that we have a professional recruiter in our general manager's search. And I'm actually thrilled and hopeful that we will see a quality of candidate we hadn't seen in this district before, a refinement in the job description, duties, responsibilities that we haven't seen before. But I agree with some of the criticism today over the contract. I'm not thrilled about the length of the term, because when you voted on the appointment, you promised it would be a quick turnaround, less than 3 months. And I didn't think that was possible, and now I'm looking at a contract that's longer. And I would rather see 3 months increments with an extender. Again, I'm the outline vote on that. I also believe, and this is something I've discussed with Adam Dempsey the 2 years I've been on the board, that before you start delineating duties between the two positions, there really needs to be a serious and careful time study. That's typically what's done in career organizations, within a small agency or even a large agency before you start reclassifying positions and adjusting salaries. It really does require a time study, and I hope that we get to that point. But I think the criticism we're hearing is that we're not doing a great job with personnel matters, and we don't do a great job with recruitment process, because in every other community, for instance, you have more community input in this type of executive role. And I went on record saying that this is not about the candidate, it's about the position. And we could have had the same exercise as the general manager search without any adjustment to having this candidate as an acting GMDOP. So I think it's an expensive exercise. I didn't think it was necessary. And again, I stated that already, and I lost that vote. And sorry, my argument wasn't compelling enough at the time. But I am hopeful, and I do the material difference in the quality of that recruitment, the quality of candidates who show interest in serving our community. So that's my statement.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Krugman?
Yes. I didn't think that I needed to say anything about hiring a temporary chief of police because I've expressed my feeling on that many times. But did I just hear you say that we are now looking to hire somebody temporary? We're going to move into a permanent position? Did I hear you say that?
I said that it would probably be my desire to, when the contract, to offer a role for Chief Hull as COP.
I thought we were looking for someone who is going to get us by for the next few months.
Uh-huh.
And I don't see our temporary hire to get us any vision to help us with the things that need to be done with this building, the things that need to be done with the safety building. I just don't see this. I mean, I have not seen Sergeant Hall's resume. But we have a need for someone who can look into the future. And I'm sorry, but I don't see
this. Mr. Krugman, I think the general manager, we are looking for somebody there right now.
Okay. Well, I don't see us getting someone very quickly because we don't have a history of getting things done in a hurry. We have a history of dragging things out forever. And there are various issues that are facing us, including the things Jim Watt was talking about. I am disappointed to hear you say that.
I'm surprised you're disappointed. We have now moved to doing two meetings a month. In 2 months, we have dealt with the lack of a chief. We have moved to get an interim person put into place. We've begun talking to a recruiter for that. That's been in 2 months since I've been seated. I'm sorry that I agree with Vanessa. It'd be great to have this done in 3 months, but realistically, that's not possible. I do believe it's possible that we will have someone hired by May. I think that's reasonable to expect if you want a good candidate. So I'm sorry to hear that. I'm not sure what more we could have been doing any faster or any better or any differently to move the process faster. But it's completely our intention to do this as quickly as possible. I don't want anyone to think that it's not.
I'm not sure we're making the right decision, but that's my opinion.
All right. Mr. Gutierrez?
My name is Andrew Gutierrez. I'm a citizen of the fifth mythical safest city in California. We've gone through a terrible period of uncertainty, and we've had bad experience one after another with chiefs of police and general managers. We've done a lot of vetting of their qualification, and it hasn't improved the end product. And that should be a message to us. We have a person who has come through the ranks, who knows the ins and outs, who knows the strengths and the weaknesses, as President Sheriff Watt has said. Well, and we should appreciate that. It would be easy for somebody to just sit back and not participate in trying to solve the problems that ails this community. I frankly think that Mr. Hart would have been the best candidate for this transition period because he had considerable experience policing in the mental wards of Northern California. And that's what this community needs. It's a bit crazy, to be quite honest with you. Now, it's time to move on, and Director Desai has said it quite nicely, that we have a mess, we've been working hard to clean it up, and it didn't occur on the watch of this board. It has been accumulating over the past 12 years. So get serious, folks, and deal with the truth and not some mythical position or perception that you might have. Time to grow up, Kang. Thanks.
Okay.
I apologize for getting up again that you all raised some issues that I didn't know about my last comment, so I'd like permission to just ask a few questions.
Sure.
One is, well, one's a question, one's a comment. The question is, how much is the professional recruiter costing us? Because that isn't something that you've told us. So I'd really like to know what that cost is and what you anticipate the total cost would be by the time it finishes. Because that obviously enters into the quote-unquote cost of Ricky Hull. Secondly, this is the first I've ever heard that we're not going to be recruiting for a COP in the traditional way. And I understand as an employment lawyer, promotion from within, I also understand that this community has a right to have a say in the qualifications of the person who manages our small police department and who interacts with this community on a day-to-day basis. And I think we ought to choose the best possible candidate we can get for that. If no one else applies and Ricky's the person who's there, great. If several people apply and Ricky's the person who's chosen, great. But to say that you are going to be in Trumpian fashion ramming him down our throat because you think that's the right choice, I truly hope that's not what's going to happen. So I encourage you that to do what I think Lynn expected was going to happen. What certainly I expected was going to happen is that you're going to be looking for a GM and a COP. And Ricky is welcome to apply and put his qualifications next to other people who apply. And then you can make a reasonable decision as to whether you promote from within. Because in the real world of employment, we don't just promote from within. We look at candidates who apply for the position and choose the best qualified.
Dave Spatney. With regard to the recruitment, are we recruiting for a half-time general manager or a full-time general manager?
Currently, we have given our recruiter the direction that we are looking for two days a week, but that will be dependent on a discussion with the general manager once they begin assessing the responsibilities and the amount of work that is needed.
When they have you lined out what you see the responsibilities would be for a two-day a week?
Absolutely. Yes.
Would we be able to see that?
Sure. Yes. Absolutely. We will publish a job description, which should have been in the appendix today.
That's what it was.
And,
okay.
Yes. Yeah.
One suggestion possibly is an interim. We on the ad hoc committee looked, as you know, at the bifurcation. And one thought might be, as an interim, it would be to hire a consultant. One that comes to mind is Peter Camper, who has done an excellent job in two or three community service districts. And the interview that we did with him, which I believe you have, was very impressive and gives a number of different recommendations as to what you should look for with regard to a part-time general manager and what duties and responsibilities and what the relationship should be with the board in that capacity. So one thought might be to look at possibly hiring him in the interim until you do find a permanent half-time general manager.
I actually spoke to him, and he has right now a current position. I don't know if that would allow him to also come here, but we thought it would be better to look for retired annuitants who had been city managers, because of the fact that we have a police department as well as other functions. So the consultant that we're working with has city management experience, and he will be looking for former city managers.
Right, and I agree that, and that's a very good approach to it. And my only thought was that Campa, and he does actually consult with more than one CSD at a time. He just finished up some work with Los Osos Community Service District, and had also been working with another community service district. So he can, I guess, walk and chew gum at the same time, so to speak. No, my only thought was, as you are recruiting or trying to find this part-time general manager, that as an interim, he might be a bridge, if you will, during that period of time, and that would allow you to then just have to deal with the chief of police position and move forward in that capacity.
Well, first off, let me thank you again for your excellent work with the ad hoc committee. And yes, thank you. And I reread the interview with Mr. Campbell before the board met with our consultant Bob Dice with PMG. And two factors occurred. One, that every member of the board felt very positively about the skill and expertise that Mr. Dice brought to us. So I didn't feel the need to search beyond because we had great rapport and a very productive working relationship. And the other was simply that, as Director Natoli has stated, we are looking for managers, general managers who have experience supervising police forces. That is a critical component for our hire.
Right. My only thought with Campbell was that it would be a very short interim period until you actually finally retired and knew it, and who was the city manager.
And that may occur. I mean, he will be on our radar. That may, we have already been told, unfortunately, that there may be an interim. Right. And that's not what we would adore, but that may come.
Right. And if you look at his history of working in with CSDs, that's basically been his role. He works for contracts for a very short period of time, maybe 3 months, maybe 6 months, maybe even a year, until the CSD finds a permanent job.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. I'll make my comments. Folks have asked about how we make hiring decisions. Well, as an employer making a hiring decision, one uses a combination of both analytical and emotional factors. These two areas provide a matrix for prudence, which was foremost in my mind when we were deciding to promote Ricky Hull to the position of interim general manager and COP. Of course, on the analytical side, cost factors most highly. Knowing that a raise would be required, because when you move from the position of a member of the POA into a management position, you lose the opportunity to have overtime. So the matter of offsets become very important. While the district does now have greater pension obligations, we have the offset of belonging to a risk pool. We also realize savings because we are eliminating the master sergeant position, which to me is twofold. It eliminates, it gives us a cost benefit, but it also reduces the top heaviness of our department, which has been a frequent complaint during the last few years. The district now can bring in officers, should we choose so, under the 2013 rules, which allow for a new or beginning officer, or require, excuse me, a new or beginning officer to pay up to 50% of their pension. Logically, the time required to make a successful hire must be weighed against the decisions that must be made and the expediency that those must be decided under. The issue of dispatch, a future MOU with the KPD, and dividing the role of GMCOP are all plans that have to be executed in the next several months. Luckily, with Mr. Holt, we were able to answer the analytical side of the equation positively. Sorry, I couldn't resist that pun. We found someone who was a known quantity, both in the department and in the community, who was already tackling the issues of dispatch and office management. In Mr. Hull, we found a candidate who is not averse or opposed to limiting his salary for the sake of the financial health of the department, and who worked successfully in the KPD for 19 years. Emotionally, this community has been through a lot. And I will be frank, that the last few years have produced a laundry list
of problems. We need a GMCOP who could accomplish the basic goal of getting along with the board, getting along with his peers, and getting along with the community. And we so far surpassed our expectations. We currently have an interim GMCOP who brings problems to us rather than us having to bring problems to him or her. But if we bring up issues, he responds without hostility. He communicates with everyone. He looks for compromise and clear communication. He has professional supervisory experience with our own small department. For the last 2 years, I've read his evaluations. I know that he's managed a schedule. I know that he's willing to come in on his days off and holidays and weekends without rancor, without attitude, and only with the community spirit in mind. And because of that, I am voting to approve, I would like to vote to approve this contract because I think we allow ourselves to move forward with a reasonable risk to the district, which unfortunately before has not occurred. So I move that we, if I may, unless there are any other further comments? Okay.
I'll go ahead. Comment after the second. I'm just going to comment now.
No, go ahead.
No, I'll second.
Oh, I haven't moved yet. So just.
I'll tell you what, I'll move to adopt the contract. Would you like to second?
I'll second.
Yeah, I'd like to comment.
Okay.
So I'm going to vote for this contract. I have to say I am surprised, Michelle, to hear you say that now you're thinking of hiring Chief Hull on a permanent basis. I don't have any problem with considering doing that. The contract is up in May, and I do think that as the contract termination date approaches, or actually sooner than that, as soon as we can get to it, we should tackle the issue of what do we want to do with the Chief of Police position. And, you know, I have no problem with Ricky applying for it, but I do think we should open it up to fair competition. And I also think we should make some effort to get a little bit more sense of what the community would like to see. You know, he's at an advantage. I mean, he's got this great relationship with the community. I'm sure those people will step forward. But I do think that as has happened in the past, there should be an open competition. When I worked for the state government, the agency had a policy for a while of just hiring from within. It was deadly. It was absolutely deadly. And I'm not saying that Ricky's a bad choice. I'm just saying that a healthy business or a healthy government will try to open up hiring to as much legitimate competition as possible in order to get the best candidate and also to get the best price, frankly. So I'm going to vote yes tonight. But I want to make it clear, I think we need to move forward on the Chief of Police issue.
All righty. We'll do a roll call on the motion.
Director Hassai?
Aye.
President Sharis Watt?
Yes.
Director Cordova?
Sorry, I was on mute. Aye.
Vice President Natoli?
Aye.
Director Welsh?
Da, as they say in Russia. I'm trying to brush up with my Russian these days. That means yes.
All right, the motion passes, and we welcome Ricky Hull as our interim General Manager, Chief of Police, with a salary.
I do have a question before you call him back in. Again, I need the specifics so that I know how to report everything to CalPERS. Also, during the past few months, since December 17th, he has accrued a number of comp hours. He does get backed out since he...
we can... Oh!
Oh, no.
We will discuss that.
Director Cordova, it just went dark in here. We lost power.
Do you know that it has no emergency lighting?
Yeah.
Oh, sure it does.
Wait, no, I don't. Okay. Oh, well, there we go. We've got... Oh, you're all brilliant. Could I speak very loudly? We'll discuss that in a lighter moment, if we may.
Yes, would you
please
would you
tomorrow?
Discuss
yes, we'll discuss. Yes. Yeah. All right.
Kumbaya.
Can you hear me? The tape recorder is going, so I think we'll move on to. If you're game, we will move on to item C, the adoption of resolution 2017-7. Which is authorizing the investment of monies in the local agency investment fund. It's on page 94. So this is the authorization that would allow Chief Hull to sign off on the transfer of funds. We're just updating. This document was passed when Kevin Hart came aboard. It's just an update when we've had a new holder of a position. So, any board comments? Any public comments? All right. I move that we adopt resolution 2017-7. Any second?
I second.
Len seconds it. All right, a roll call. Okay.
Okay.
Do you want us to shout and say our name and then just yes or no? Would that work?
Director Hassai.
Yes.
President Sherris Watt.
Yes.
Director Cordova.
Oh, no. Vanessa? Yes.
Vice President Natoli.
Yes.
Director Welsh?
Yes.
The motion passes.
All right, 5-0. Item D. We're on to committee appointments for the district. I thank you all so much for applying. I so appreciate it. And I'm sure we will add to some of these committees as the year goes on. And let me state for the record that some of you may find, and I apologize, my power was out for most of the morning, so I couldn't make the contact that I wanted to with some of you. But if it was not the committee that you were ideally wished to be appointed to, I'm happy to have a discussion. But I do believe that your skills are vitally important on each of these committees, and I really am going to ask, I'm just going to thank you and ask you if you'll please consider staying. Solid Waste Committee, Director Natoli Vice President Natoli is responsible for, and Olin, you don't have to write these, I'll give you a list.
Perfect, thank you.
That will be Lisa Cole and Anthony Knight. The Technology Committee, also run by Vice President Natoli, that's David Bergen and Simon Braffman. The Park Planning Committee that is run by Director Hassai, Paula Black, Peter Conrad, Gretchen Gilfillan, Katie Gluck, and Ciara Wood. Policy and Procedures, Eileen Natoli and Vanessa Cordova, A. Stevens Delk and Barbara Diltz. Park Grounds, Charlie Danielson and Peter Liddell by Director Welsh. Sorry. Community Outreach with Director Hassai, Andrew Gutierrez and David Spath. Finance Committee, which is Director Welsh and myself, Jacqueline Berman, Rob Furman, Paul Haxo, Carl Kruger, Lori Trevino, and Jim Watt. And Emergency Preparations, Sylvia Hassai, Maya Churi, Paul Doro, and Derek Suring. Okay?
Could you post those?
Absolutely. They will be posted. Yes.
Rochelle, I have a question about the grounds committee.
Yes.
We will. Can we add some members?
Yes, we will be adding. I realize this, and it may be because of, you know, the weather, to, you know, or people haven't, but we absolutely, I'm not intending that your committee stay so small, and I apologize, you know, a couple of these wonderful people I know would be willing to serve on multiple committees. We just made a start with putting folks each on one. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Oh, don't worry, I'll give everyone, we'll have a list, and I move that we adjourn the meeting.
I'll second.
All in favor? Well, how about Director Cordova?
Aye.
Yeah.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. So, all right, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you, and please walk safely.
Yeah, walk with somebody who's got a flashlight if you don't.
Yeah. All right, good night, Director Cordova. Sorry for shouting. That's amazing.
I missed somebody in finance.
That's fine, I'll give you the list. Yes. I will give you the list.
Thank you.